Welcome to episode 57 of A Meaningful Mess Podcast. In this episode, I had the absolute pleasure to chat with Megan Minow, also known as Gifted with Goldens, a gifted specialist in Colorado. We had a wonderful conversation regarding what it looks like to design meaningful extensions for gifted learners and how gifted specialists can support general education teachers through co-planning and co-teaching. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed recording this episode. Also, some exciting news to share. You can also watch our conversation over on Facebook. Just find my page, A Meaningful Mess, and you'll be able to watch the video of our conversation in its entirety. I've included a link to my page in the show notes so you can check it out there. Grab your notepad and get ready to take in some good stuff. Here we go. Hey friends, what is up? Welcome to A Meaningful Mess Podcast. I'm your host, Andy McNair, and I believe that it's perfectly fine for learning to be messy as long as it's meaningful. Yep, I said what I said. Each week on my podcast, I share manageable and meaningful ideas for you to utilize to engage and empower gifted learners. But let's be honest, good teaching is just good teaching. My hope is that the ideas and strategies shared on each episode will help you find meaning in your mess. Let's do this. Hey, you guys, welcome back to A Meaningful Mess Podcast. I'm Andy McNair, and I am so excited about today's conversation. You know, in episode 56, the last episode, I talked a little bit about meaningful extensions for gifted learners and how important it is that we think through those extensions as we're designing a learning experience. And I mentioned how those extensions should be prioritized, that they should be meaningful, they should be appropriate, and that they should be intentional. And as we think about those things, as I was kind of processing through that, one of my favorite people that I follow on Instagram, Gifted with Goldens, and I'm going to let her officially introduce herself in just a second. We are very like-minded, I think, say very similar things. And as I was looking through some of her posts, she had this great post. I don't know if it was a week ago, Megan, or a couple of weeks ago, but you talked about basically ways to differentiate academically for gifted learners. And I thought, man, what a great opportunity for us to collaborate, to come together. And so I'm going to be sharing some practical ideas for extensions. I know that a lot of you are wondering, like, okay, I know what extensions should be now. Like, the next step is, how do I do that? And so, Megan, I'm so excited that you're here. Will you tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do? And then we'll just get going with the content.
Sure. Thanks so much, Andy. I'm so excited to be here today. Kind of exploring how I got into gifted education. I myself, as a child, was a gifted child. I grew up in Illinois, and at the time, there wasn't anything specific for gifted children. We'd be pulled out once a month, maybe, for some activities. And then when I became a teacher, I started teaching third grade, and I realized that I felt like I was not meeting the needs of my gifted students, and it kind of came full circle back to my education. So I proceeded to get my master's in gifted education back in Florida. That's under the special education umbrella, so little different. And then I am now out in Colorado teaching gifted students. My district currently uses a push-in model, so I have the awesome opportunity to work with many teachers co-planning and co-teaching for my gifted students each week.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love that idea of co-teaching and co-planning. I think sometimes gifted education specialists can sometimes feel like an island or feel kind of off by themselves. So that idea of just working with other teachers is super, I think, exciting. And I think we have similar stories as well. I was in the general education classroom, fourth and fifth grade, so a little bit older than the kids you were working with. And just same situation, like wasn't really sure how to serve my gifted learners. And it wasn't until I was given the opportunity to work with them specifically that I began to recognize, like, oh my gosh, like there are so many things I should have been doing and could have been doing, but I just didn't know what I didn't know. And so I always like to say that to teachers now, like, if you haven't been doing these things, it's not that you've done something wrong. It's just when we know better, we do better, right? I love that quote. And I think it's something that we have to consider. Okay. So let's talk about, first of all, why do you think, because I shared my perspective on the last podcast that I did, but you tell us, why do you think meaningful extensions are important for gifted learners?
Certainly. And I think, just kind of going back to that co-planning, I think that's so much where the meaningful extensions come from. It's one thing to be in a classroom and co-teach, but when I'm able to co-plan, that's where we can really develop those meaningful extensions and make them purposeful, like you said, and intentional and appropriate, and not just that extra work for a student, because no one wants extra work. No one wants to be doing something that doesn't relate to what they're currently learning. They want to be engaged. They want to be challenged. Our gifted students are so inquisitive about the world around them. When we give them activities that aren't actually challenging them, then they start to develop some of those issues of not enjoying school, being bored, starting to possibly be a behavior issue because they don't know what else to do with themselves. School is supposed to be a time where they're able to learn and grow. And if we aren't challenging our gifted students, then they're missing out on a big opportunity.
Oh gosh, I think that is such a great point. I think oftentimes we can get frustrated with gifted learners because, like you said, they either become a behavior problem or they can become apathetic or disengaged. But oftentimes mm-hmm. it's really a lot easier to fix than I think we sometimes assume. So often it's a result of them either being bored or just not being challenged. And I think having that conversation of how do we engage them and how do we make school a place that gifted learners want to be is just a really important conversation right now. So one of the posts that you shared recently on Instagram that I absolutely loved, I saw it last night, and you talked about something called the teacher scramble. Will you explain to us what that is and kind of your thoughts and your ideas behind that post?
Yeah, of course. I think it came from just a conversation I was having with one of my colleagues. And she said that she just kind of feels like she's scrambling sometimes. And I was like, wow, let's coin this term, the teacher scramble. But I think we've all been there. I certainly being one of those people. And it's not a bad thing. It's just an opportunity to recognize when we as teachers don't have something planned meaningful for our learners, our gifted learners, or our learners that finish early, and we feel like we're scrambling. And many times it leads to help a friend, go on a computer, do something extra, read a book, and it never feels good afterwards. We feel like our students aren't learning, and quite honestly, our students can tell too. And I think the biggest way that we can get rid of the teacher scramble is just being intentional in our planning. And it's certainly not easy. I'm not saying that by any means, but it's definitely necessary.
I think that word intentional is so important. Like, it's really thinking through, like, what are the things that, you know, it's so hard in a general education classroom. And I always want to say that and recognize that. Like, you know, I was given the opportunity in my last few years in the classroom. Now working at an ESC, I can kind of see the bigger picture. But when I was in the classroom and I was working with my gifted learners, and I looked back on my time in the gen ed classroom, it was just so hard because I wasn't serving just one group of learners. You know, I had struggling learners, I had gifted learners, and so oftentimes I found myself doing, when you coined that term teacher scramble, I was like, that's exactly what it feels like. And I think you made such a great point when you said that, you know, after that happens, you don't feel great because you go home and you think about, man, they could have done this or they could have done that. But when it's an afterthought and when we're reactive to that, we're often just trying to give them something to keep them busy. And unfortunately, I think more importantly, even than it making the kid not feel great, it doesn't make us as educators feel great. And so mm-hmm. I want to be sure that we say that we're not just talking from the student's point of view. Gosh, I think the learner's perspective and what they experience is so important, but we as educators should also enjoy our time in the classroom. And so if doing this on the front end will make us feel better about things kind of on the back end of a learning experience, I think it's definitely something to consider. So let's talk a little bit about depth of knowledge, because you mentioned that in one of the posts that you shared. And I think this is something that we sometimes forget to, like you said, intentionally consider. Most of us have heard of DOK, depth of knowledge. We think through those different layers or different pieces, but what role do you think that plays in extending the learning for gifted learners or just kids who already get it?
I think depth of knowledge is kind of twofold when we're planning. First is through our unit plans. If we wait until the daily lesson plan to figure out how we're going to differentiate, it's too late. When we look at unit plans, I was just having this conversation with some teachers, but we typically write objective statements or our I can statements for our learners. And what I've started doing with some teams is writing deeper depth of knowledge objective statements of saying, okay, what are we going to do when we pre-assess and we see students already know and can reach these objectives? Mm-hmm. Well, right there, we already have objectives of what we want the students to do next that are at a deeper depth of knowledge level. So I think starting at your unit planning for depth of knowledge can be super helpful. Then when we look at our daily extensions, something I did a few years ago was I took math questions for each standard and I wrote it at each depth of knowledge level. So I wrote it at DOK 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I took the time to sit down and really say, what would this question look like in math at a deeper level? So rather than saying, what is 5 plus 5, which is very simple. If kids know how to add, they're going to be able to do that. Well, taking it a step deeper and saying, can you create a situation in which you might have to add 5 plus 5? Now we're forcing our students to think a little bit more, and we're asking those questions that are meaningful. I think when we practice writing questions at a deeper depth of knowledge, we start asking our students those deeper questions. Because if we don't practice it, we're not going to be able to do it in the moment. And I think when we are so quick to questioning all the time, whether it's in a small group or a whole group lesson, we're not asking those DOK 3 and 4 questions. And we're staying at that surface level. So I think even having a reference sheet of deeper questions or even just practicing it when we're writing our lesson plans, maybe with our co-teacher or someone in our building that's working on that deeper depth of knowledge, we purposely write out each daily lesson, maybe 3 or 4 questions that we can ask that we can kind of reference and guide our thinking. I think that would be super helpful for challenging our thinking of our students.
Yeah, I like that idea of it really does take practice. I know that when I just shifted from the general education classroom to the gifted classroom, I really had to practice thinking through what does a deeper understanding even look like? Like, how do I take kids from, you know, so often, unfortunately, in education, we do that surface level thing. And I'll be honest, sometimes I think that's a systematic problem. Like, we're just trying to get through the content so quickly, or we're trying to check off all the boxes we have to check off as educators, that we forget what deep understanding really looks like. And so when I think about depth of knowledge, I think you gave such a great example, because oftentimes I think we know that a student is ready to go deeper when they can actually apply what it is that they've learned, right? When they can take it beyond that, I can do it on a worksheet or I can do it sitting here with you as my teacher. But when they can actually take it and apply it beyond the walls of the classroom, or they can apply it through a situation like you shared, I think that is when we really get to that deep understanding that we actually, every kid needs to get to and reach at some point, right?
I was just going to say, one of my favorite resources that I've used in the past is, and I'm not too sure, I'm just saying this off the tip of my tongue now, but on Teachers Pay Teachers, someone sells depth of knowledge questions for reading, and they're on little popsicle sticks so the kids can use them independently, and they're color-coded at different levels so the kids can start at a lower level and move up as they feel ready for those deeper questions, and it can be used with any book. And I think implementing simple activities like that, where the kids are excited for the challenge questions and they're actively engaged in any book that they're reading, can be super helpful for any teacher to quickly implement as well.
Yeah, that's the key, is getting them to a place where they're engaged. And I always like to describe engagement as that active willingness to invest. And I think so often when you walk in a classroom, it's pretty easy to see whether or not that active willingness to invest has been ignited, or if the kids are in that place. I actually was having the conversation today with someone. We were talking about the difference between engagement and entertainment. And I was sharing that I really see that as engagement is on their part, right? They're actively willing to invest as a learner in the learning experience.
and entertainment is more something we have to do as educators. And I think there's a difference, and I don't think kids have to be entertained in order to be engaged. And so I love that idea of using depth of knowledge or a deeper understanding of the content to actually engage gifted learners, make sure that they're bought in, and again, make the classroom a place that they feel challenged and ultimately will want to be. So I think one of the questions that I get asked often as a gifted specialist is, how do I know when to extend the learning? So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Like, when you're working with teachers and you're talking to this about teachers and you think about that pre-assessment, how do you think a teacher does know when a kid is ready for an extension versus when a kid needs extra support?
I think I've been having a lot of conversations about pre-assessments recently, because a lot of teachers feel like they don't have time for it, or they think, oh, well, this is a third grade standard, so I need to teach it. My kids don't know it. But kids come in with a lot of background knowledge, especially our gifted learners, or they pick up on it really fast. So I think our pre-assessments, a lot of math curriculums already come with pre-assessments, but even those can be really long. So looking specifically at each standard you're trying to address and make sure there are some purposeful questions can give you a really good understanding of which standards from the unit they do know, which they don't know, and then that can kind of help you compact. I think it's also those daily check-ins and listening to students. You'll have some students, say you're teaching a basic unit on fractions, you're going to have some students that catch on to it really quick and are ready for something when you didn't expect them to be. That's when you can sit back at the end of the day, reflect, and say, you know what? Maybe this week, the rest of this week needs to look different for them. What can I do differently? So I think those pre-assessments and those check-ins are so necessary. I think small group is a great time for those check-ins. I just talked about this recently in one of my blog posts about how a lot of our gifted students are not willing to share what they know in a whole group situation. And I think having small group lessons where it's differentiated, kids don't really realize they're getting something different because it's just so naturally occurring. But then a lot of gifted students are willing to share what they know, and you get a better insight into where you need to compact or differentiate or extend.
Yeah, I like that. I think just recognizing that it doesn't always have to be this formal thing. You know, formative assessment is so important, and I think oftentimes those check-ins can be more beneficial than the formal assessments. Like, we can really start to see. And I think too, you know, when you were talking about the standards, I think it's important for us as educators to be really thoughtful about, you know, which standards need to be explicitly taught or explicitly learned, and which standards are the ones that they can learn through application or that I can weave into the things that they're doing. And then when that happens, what evidence am I looking for to know that they actually understand it? And I think if we can just even shift our thinking from I've had this conversation often recently, is, you know, as educators, we have to make the shift from not just thinking, did I teach it? But then we have to have the conversation, did they learn it? And then did they understand it? Which I think goes back to depth of knowledge and that whole idea. So I love that. Such great points. Okay, so when we think about, because this is what I've promised on the podcast, and I want to make sure we talk about this, when we think about some practical ways to extend, because I know this is what so many people are looking for, like, okay, you guys tell us that we need to design extensions. We know that gifted learners need opportunities to extend the learning. But then how do we do that? What does that look like? So would you share maybe just a couple of practical ideas, and then we'll get into some really specific things that I wanted to talk about on the podcast as well.
Certainly. I think before we jump in, it's hard because I can give a few examples, and I will share a few of some of my go-tos. But it's not like you're going to use the same extension every single day in every lesson. So there's some great resources, and none of these I created. I've just found through listening to others, reading books, learning from others. And I think it's just the more we're open to finding them, the more we'll realize that it's a great way to extend thinking. The biggest one I would say is depth and complexity. I just learned about that since starting this new role as a gifted teacher, and I think it's a great way in all subject areas to start extending student thinking, and a lot of times independently, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. I think with depth and complexity, what is tricky is a lot of people will see the icon details, for example, and they'll say, well, my students know how to find the details of a book. but it's moving past just the identification. And this is where it ties in with that depth of knowledge, but going deeper with the depth and complexity icons. For example, which detail was the most important in the book? Or rank these five details from the book. And that's where we're going to start getting that deeper thinking. So depth and complexity, the icon is a place to start, but then you have to move past it. I will say, Ian Bird wrote an incredible book about depth and complexity, and the chapters are super short. And anytime I'm about to teach depth and complexity, I read that chapter before I go and teach it, because it helps you recognize how to move past just that. What are the details of this book? And asking the deeper questions, and they have lots of awesome sentence frames and places to go with depth and complexity. On top of depth and complexity, one of my most recent ways to extend is through hexagonal thinking. There's a lot of information on it on the Cult of Pedagogy website. And hexagonal thinking is a great way for kids to be engaged and take the learning in their own hands. Mm-hmm. So essentially what you do is you can write terms. For example, you could do vocabulary from a book. Maybe you could do different math problems, and you write one thing on each hexagon, and the kids have to figure out how all the hexagons connect. And then they can add maybe post-it notes next to it, what they're thinking. And what's incredible is if you split them into small groups, once they all finish, they're going to have such different ways of how they connected those hexagons, and there's that deep thinking going on. Then they can share, maybe do some of that judgment of why did you do it this way? I did it this way. Talk about which way is best. So hexagonal thinking is another strategy that can be awesome for gifted learners. One last thing I will say is tasks with different entry points. So when we're thinking about, for example, in math, when we're thinking about a math problem, creating that math problem and purposefully writing the same task, so everyone's focusing on the same standard and task, but writing it from different entry points can be really supportive for your students who are at different points in math. So those are kind of three very easy to implement strategies. They all do take planning and learning about the strategies. But once you kind of get the hang of it, you can keep going with them in multiple different contexts.
I love that. I love all of those ideas. You know, a couple of things made me think about a couple of other ideas or just additional things. I know there's one strategy that I often talk about and have shared, and I did not come up with the strategy, but I've heard of it, and it's just called MDF, which is like, what? But it's called most difficult first, right? Having them do the most difficult problem first, which would be a different entry point. And I just think that's so important, because I think about math class specifically, and for a gifted kid to have to prove 25 times that they can do a certain type of problem makes zero sense. I also think about, gosh, depth and complexity, I just am such a fan of. And I think you're talking about, is it the book, The Gifted Guild's Guide to Depth and Complexity? Okay,
yes. Perfect.
So I will make sure that I'll share a link to that in the show notes. My words, I need Dr. Pepper, words are not coming out. But I'll definitely share the link to that so you guys can check it out if you're listening to the podcast. But such a great resource. I think Ian and Lisa Van Gerber wrote that together. But one of the things that I wanted to say about the depth and complexity icons, because you made such a great point that it's about so much more than the icons. I was actually talking to John Gould, who runs Jay Taylor. They do all of the icons. I'll put a link to their website as well. Tons of resources when it comes to depth and complexity. But his mom was Betty Gould. And so it was Betty Gould and Sandra Kaplan who, you know, created the icons. And he was telling me, you know, mom and Sandy, that's what he calls Sandra Kaplan, which was so crazy to hear him just refer to her as Sandy. But as he was telling me, he said, you know, they never intended people or educators to just use the icons. Instead, they wanted them to do exactly what you shared. They wanted kids to be able to use those icons to trigger a specific way of thinking. And I think so often we get wrapped up in teaching the icons and teaching that, hey, this is details and this is language of the discipline. But those icons are about so much more than just memorizing what they stand for and using them in a very simple way. They were designed to help kids learn how to think like an expert. And when used in the way that you shared, I think they can really do that. So thanks for sharing that. It just reminded me of that conversation that I had with him. And it that made so much sense to me, because first of all, to hear him say like that's how they intended it, I got goosebumps, because I was like, oh my gosh, like it's so cool to hear him talk about this is what they meant by that. But I think even in my own classroom, when I first started using the icons, I don't think I used them correctly, because it was very much about, you know, oh, language of the discipline, that's vocabulary. But it's about so much more than the vocabulary, right? And so I think that's the key when it comes to depth and complexity, is really utilizing those in the way that they were intended to be used. So again, Ian Bird also has a ton of really great resources on his website. And so I'll share a link to that in the show notes as well. Okay, so when we think about that, I think those are all, gosh, y'all, those are really practical things that you can use. Like if you're thinking like, huh, I don't have any practical ideas, there's three that you could implement this week. And I think those are all really simple to implement. I don't think, I always like to say things need to be manageable. And I think those are manageable ideas that you can kind of take and utilize. Is there anything else when you think about, when you think about those practical extensions, is there any other advice that you would give educators when they're working with their learners and they have a kid who finishes on the spot early? Are there other things that you can consider or anything else that you would share?
I think kind of just the conversation you and I were having earlier, Andy, about how, looking at how our lessons are structured. Because if we have a quick whole group lesson and then it breaks into student independent work and you're giving all the students the same independent work, you're always going to have kids that finish early. Mm-hmm. So I think it's looking at how can we purposefully create a lesson model that allows all students to be introduced to that deeper thinking, because these strategies are good for all students. All students need to be exposed to it, not just our gifted learners. So how can we create this lesson time that all students are actively engaged the whole time? And maybe it's not the quick whole group and then the practice. Maybe it's an engaging activity that the whole class is working on together in partners the whole time, or small groups. So just kind of flipping that standard that we have of a quick whole group and then a practice. Maybe it's small groups that the kids are actively engaged in. It's going to be different for every classroom, because every classroom has such different needs. Even our gifted students have such different needs. So it's even hard to just say, here's something to do with your gifted students, because every gifted student has different strengths, different ways they like to learn, different passions. So just analyzing how you're structuring your lessons, and then also how does that impact your students' individual needs?
Yeah, that's such a great point, because we were talking about that before we started recording the podcast, about it is about the way that you design the learning experience. Like, that's the whole idea of this being proactive versus being reactive. There's going to be moments where you're going to have to react, because you may not have something. But if you can be intentional about thinking about that before the learning experience. And I think one of the things that I think it's so important to say is, why would you give a gifted learner busy work when you could give them an opportunity to dive deeper into the content? I think in most states, regardless of where you teach, it's important that gifted learners show growth. I know here in Texas, our gifted learners have to show growth. They can't stay kind of plateaued. And in order to do that, you have to give them an opportunity to go deeper into the content. And when you design your learning experiences in such a way, like you were saying, that I'm going to give them the content or maybe do a mini lesson. But then when they go ahead to do the work, it's important to have already thought through, what am I going to do for my kids who understand this content, and what am I going to do for my students who don't? So I really, really like that idea. It's good stuff. Okay, so I guess this is a really great conversation. And I think that the practical ideas that you gave were perfect and things that people can apply in a really easy way. And you guys, if you're feeling like right now, like, gosh, I don't even know where to find those things, remember, they're going to be in the show notes. It's fine. I'll put it all there for you guys to check out. And I would just say, like, what advice would you give to a gifted educator, other than what we just talked about, designing the learning experiences? Are there any other pieces of advice you would give to educators who work specifically with gifted learners, and how they can support general education teachers? I think that's a really important conversation right now. Like, it's not our role, I don't think, as gifted specialists to just work with the gifted learners, but it's also our role to support other teachers who have so many other things going on. So any advice you would give to them?
I think this goes so much back to the planning, like growing your, what is it? Tilling the soil to grow the flowers, right? I probably said that so wrong, but spend your time really purposefully planning, because anyone can teach the lesson that's well planned, and anyone can make sure the kids are being extended for if it's planned. So as a gifted specialist, I think our job is to help teachers plan. Teachers are not the ones who have to be coming up with all the ideas. We all have incredible expertise, and when we put our brains together, that's when we can design that meaningful learning. And it should not only be on the teachers. There's so many people to help and come up with these ideas that I think when we spend that time purposefully planning, the lesson and the teaching is an easy part.
Oh gosh, I agree. And then for just a general education classroom. So if I'm a general education teacher, I'm listening to this podcast, maybe I'm feeling overwhelmed and I want to do what's best for my gifted learners. I just don't know where to start. Maybe, you know, there's a lot of campuses that they don't have the support of a gifted specialist, mm-hmm. or they don't have, you know, everything is so different. Districts are so different in how they provide that support. So what would you say to a general education teacher who just doesn't know where to start and is just kind of thinking like, I want to do better by my gifted learners. I just don't know what to do first.
I would start by saying that was me. And to give yourself grace. I mean, there's only so much you can learn all at once. I just shared three different strategies of ways that you can implement. Don't try them all at once. Focus on one, get comfortable with it, feel like it's making a change, and then look for something new. Once you feel like you're comfortable with one strategy, go and try to find another strategy. There are so many incredible podcasts and websites and blogs on strategies that you can use with gifted students. And it can be overwhelming at times, and just start with one thing and go slowly.
I love that. Such a great point. Even, look, you guys, I would even say with depth and complexity, like you're not even probably going to implement that all at once. It's correct. One or two icons at a time, right? I think sometimes teachers get frustrated because they want, you know, they want to introduce them all and they want their students to get it. That's just not the way it works. Even gifted learners, giving it to them in small chunks is going to be much more beneficial. So if you decide to implement something like the depth and complexity icons, that's not going to happen overnight. That's something you're going to have to plan for and not feel like you're failing if they don't get it right away. And so I think that whole idea of giving yourself grace is so important. I saw a quote, oh gosh, I can't even remember what I saw it on, but it was basically like, this whole idea of if you're worried about being a good teacher, you already are one. And I think the same is true for what we're talking about here. If you're worried about whether or not you're serving your gifted learners well, then you're already one step ahead of where some people are. And so that idea of, you know what, I'm doing the best that I can and I'm looking for ideas and I'm implementing those when I can. I think starting there and growing that, like you shared, Megan, is such a good idea. So, okay, so I want to end with you. If you have any final thoughts, you can definitely share those, but I definitely want you to let other people, because you share such valuable content on Instagram. And so I wanted to give you a second to share how people can reach out with you, reach out to you, whether they can find you on your website or on Instagram. What does that look like and how can they follow up if they have questions?
Yeah, I am on quite a few platforms and I try to keep it consistent. It's just Gifted with Goldens. I've got two adorable golden retrievers. Shout out to them. I don't have kids to shout out, so I have to shout out my dogs, right? But my website is giftedwithgoldens.com. That can link you to my Instagram and my email and my TPT and get a hold of me however you want. But the biggest thing that it says on my website is join the conversation. Gifted education is so important for so many of our students and our children. And it's had its ups and downs, but we're working really hard. There's so many incredible people working hard to support our gifted students and help them be successful. And I think we just all need to join the conversation, because it's conversations like these that help build awareness and help teachers understand how they can best support those students.
Oh, so true. It's such good stuff. So yeah, so I actually connected with Megan on Instagram. Oh my gosh, you guys, I've been trying to learn Instagram and do all the things for the last couple of years, you can find me on Instagram at A Meaningful Mess, but I think we both like just appreciate the gifted community specifically on Instagram, but gosh, reaching out via websites or really on any social media platform, I feel like can be so beneficial, because the more of us that are saying these things and the more conversations that we can have, the more we begin to create that space where we're just kind of creating awareness about the gifted community and what those kids need and deserve. So Megan, thank you so much for being here. And you guys, seriously, reach out to her if you have any questions. I'm going to share all of her information in my show notes for sure, so you can check that out there. Thank you so much, you guys, for being patient with all of the little hiccups we may have had. But this was a great conversation, Megan. I just appreciate it. And I appreciate the work that you do. And we'll be in touch and talk again soon for sure.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Bye, you guys. I'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to learn with me today. I absolutely love this community and enjoy sharing and learning with you. Check out today's episode notes by swiping up in most podcast apps. If you'd like to learn and connect more, you can follow me over on Twitter at McNairAN3, and you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at A Meaningful Mess. You can always find tons of resources, inspiration, and information over on my website, andymcnair.com. Be sure to check out my blog, Genius Hour resources, and so much more. Enjoy the rest of your day, and as always, I hope that today's episode has inspired you to find meaning in your mess.